All right, so I'll officially call this case. It's number 81637-COA, Keolis Transit Services versus District Court. And real party in interest is Shay Toth, or Toth. All right, so we have Mr. Muehlbauer appearing for the petitioner, and Mr. Marchek appearing for the respondents. For a moment there, I saw a third lawyer. Is there someone else who's also participating in this argument today?
Your Honor, that's Boyd Moss. He's my co-counsel. He's just going to observe.
All right.
He won't actually argue anything.
Okay. Earlier today, we did have two lawyers appear for one respondent, and they split the argument. But if he's just going to observe, we'll let it be handled that way. We did, of course, receive an amicus brief in this case, too. We typically do not have amicus appear at oral argument. So there might be other observers. Okay. All right, Mr. Muehlbauer, would you like to reserve any time for a rebuttal argument?
I would like to try and reserve just 3 minutes. We'll see if I have anything left at the end. I'll do my best.
All right, we'll shoot for 3 minutes then. All right, this is, as I mentioned, it's a very interesting case that presents some legal issues that are not fully yet resolved in Nevada. There are also some factual issues in this case, too. You know, this is a pretrial proceeding. The Supreme Court has generally been assigning these pretrial discovery type matters to the Court of Appeals. Now, we're trying to develop some case law in this area where it might be missing. This might be such a case for it. I don't know. That's part of the reason why we're having this argument, so we can get these issues more sorted out and also to look at what the larger implications are. All right, you may proceed then, Mr. Muehlbauer, for the petitioner.
All right. Thank you, Your Honors. Yeah, this really is an issue that I think is pretty important around Nevada. We all encounter it, I think, especially in personal injury litigation. So we appreciate Your Honor is taking the time to hear our argument today. My plan quickly is to try and first present you with a quick factual background, followed by a summary of the legal arguments, and then conclude with our response to some of the legal arguments raised by plaintiff and the amicus in this case. If you do have any questions throughout, though, please don't hesitate to just stop me and ask. I've kind of got my notes up here covering some of the cameras, so feel free to just jump in the internet audio fashion, and I'll stop, all right?
Okay.
All right, so just going to the quick factual background here. On the evening of July 1st, 2017, a vehicle driven by my client, Andre Petway, who's not a petitioner today, was sitting at an intersection of Boulder Highway and Sahara Avenue waiting to turn left. Mr. Petway was in the course and scope of his employment with petitioner Keolis Transit Services, so that's why Keolis is the petitioner in this case. Sitting directly in front of Mr. Petway's vehicle was a vehicle driven by plaintiff, Shay Toth. And just to let you guys know throughout this argument, I'm going to be referring to the real party in interest, Shay Toth, as plaintiff, just because I know I'm going to slip up and call her plaintiff later on, because we've been briefing in this case for months now, and it's just going to be a habit. So I figured I would just adopt the term plaintiff at the beginning. But when I do say plaintiff, I obviously mean real party in interest. All right, anyway. Once the light turned green, both vehicles began to move forward in preparation to make the turn. In the middle of the turn process, plaintiff hit the brakes, came to a near stop prior to entering the intersection. Mr. Petway did not anticipate plaintiff's vehicle stopping after the light turned green, and his vehicle hit the rear end of plaintiff's vehicle. 4 days after this accident, plaintiff's attorney, Mr. Marchek, who's joined us today, sent a letter of representation to my client, petitioner Keolis, informing it that plaintiff would be seeking financial compensation for injuries she claimed that occurred in the accident. 12 days later, July 17, 2017, Keolis's insurance adjuster ordered ISO reports, insurance services office reports, which I think everybody's familiar with, to kind of look and see what other claims she's made around the country. After more than a year of back and forth communications with plaintiff's counsel and Keolis's insurer regarding plaintiff's claims, Keolis's insurer decides to commission sub rosa videos, surveillance videos of the public activities of plaintiff. Approximately a So that's in September of 2018. Approximately a year later, plaintiff filed her complaint in this case on June 21st, 2019. DLS, through my office, filed its answer August 6th of 2019. Then in September, about a month later, September of 2019, our office commissioned a third sub rosa video of plaintiff. On October 18th, 2019, plaintiff sent a request for production of documents pursuant to NRCP 34 that included a request for any surveillance videos and related documents, thereby triggering an obligation to get into this issue that we're dealing with today. I originally had longer chronology of what happened here, but I'm gonna jump right to the discovery commission hearing because I've run out of time. I'm gonna try and use my time most effectively, but it's all in our briefing, obviously. So after the full briefing, the matter came on for hearing on April 23rd, 2020. The Discovery Commissioner ruled that the ISO reports, prepared just 12 days after the letter of representation was issued, were not privileged, as they were just generated in the ordinary course of petitioner's insurance claim adjusting activities. However, the Discovery Commissioner agreed with us that the surveillance videos and reports prepared more than a year later were protected from disclosure by NRCP 26B3's work product doctrine. The Discovery Commissioner directed, however, that if petitioner planned to use these materials at trial, they must be disclosed within 30 days following plaintiff's deposition. Plaintiff then filed her objection to the Discovery Commissioner's report and recommendation June 4th, 2020. After briefing was complete, the Honorable Richard Scotti issued his one-page ruling on June 24th, 2020. Judge Scotti and a handwritten footnote ordered that all materials were to be turned over immediately, despite our claims of privilege. In response to this, we turned over the ISO reports and provided those to plaintiff on June 18, 2020. We recognized that the ISO reports were generated in the ordinary course. We have abandoned that issue for this writ. We are only focusing on the surveillance materials. In order to preserve the privileged nature of the remaining documents, however, we filed this petition for a writ of prohibition on August 14, 2020. And the only issue we're presenting to this court is, did the district court exceed its authority by denying petitioner's claim of privilege and ordering petitioner to produce surveillance videos and reports that were created in anticipation of litigation pursuant to NRCP 26B3? All right, so that's our background. I'm going to try and just hit the highlights of I know you guys have all read everything. I know you're very familiar with the arguments, but I want to try and hit some of the highlights of our arguments, and then I was going to address some of the responses and see what we can do. So at the outset, it should be noted that the issues we're arguing here are most of what we're talking about is purely legal issues where the court should be reviewing the district court's decision de novo. And to put that forth, I'm relying on the Nevada Supreme Court's opinion in the Wynn Resorts case that you guys are all very, very familiar with. And that they're considering the same type of arguments, and they stated that they review the determination de novo. Our argument here is summed up pretty simply as follows. The surveillance materials were prepared in anticipation of litigation, and plaintiff has never attempted to demonstrate that she has a substantial need for the materials under 26B3. Our petition relies primarily on two sources of authority, NRCP 26B3, which I've already said probably nine times by now, and the Wynn Resorts case, which just happened in 2017. NRCP 26B3's language states that a party may not discover documents that are prepared in anticipation of litigation or for trial by or for another party or its representative.
The definition. Mr. Mollenbauer, let me just interrupt you.
Sure.
It's not that you're unwilling to turn over the videotapes. Your position is that the plaintiff's deposition needs to be completed before you turn them over. So as we listen to you today, has that decision been made?
We have not been able to take plaintiff's deposition. That is correct. That we won't know if there's any impeachment evidence we want to use in our case until we depose plaintiff. And we haven't been able to depose plaintiff because of this issue hanging out there. Plaintiff's counsel has said they won't put her up until this issue is resolved. They want to have the video before I say that it's privileged and I want to see what she says in deposition. Then I'll decide if we're going to use it or not. If we're going to use it, we'll waive the privilege and disclose them.
Well, work product is a qualified privilege, right?
Sure.
So it's qualified by undue hardship and necessity. But in this particular case, you are, if I understand you correctly, You are willing to turn over the video if you are going to use it at trial.
Absolutely.
And that would be use it as what, impeachment or rebuttal evidence?
Yes, purely as impeachment. And we do understand that in Nevada, unlike the federal rules, impeachment evidence does have to be disclosed in advance. And that's why we were, appreciated the discovery commissioner's opinion, because she said, if you're going to use it as impeachment evidence, you have to give it to them well before the discovery closes, so they have a chance to review it, respond, handle it however they want. There's no trial by ambush, but at the same time, you have an opportunity to question plaintiff in her deposition to determine if you even want to use it, if it even is impeachment evidence.
Thank you.
All right. So anyway, I went through the 26B3 standard. Then the Wynn Resorts case looked at 26B3 because, as you know, no matter how well we write a statute or a rule, you can never write for every possible eventuality. You have to construe it. And the Supreme Court did in the Wynn Resorts case, and it adopted the because of test, as everyone is familiar with. It says, under this test, documents are determined to be prepared in anticipation of litigation, quote, in light of the nature of the document and the factual situation in the particular case, the document can be fairly.
So let me ask you this. This case arises from a car accident, but because it's the employer's vehicle, you have this additional wrinkle in the case, which wouldn't happen if this were just, you know, a car accident between you and me on the street. You had this initial claim through the employer. And that adds an interesting wrinkle here because, you know, depending on who, and I know that we don't know all these facts, depending on who and why this videotape was originally commissioned, what the instructions were given, what conversations were had, which I know we've not gotten into. But the Wynn Resorts test distinguishes between documents prepared in anticipation of litigation versus documents prepared in the ordinary course of business. But when it comes to things like workers' comp, you know, you can make an argument that's kind of a weird distinction, because arguably in workers' comp, your ordinary course of business is the anticipation of litigation. What's your response to that?
Well, yeah, I think when the Wynn, if you read the Wynn Resorts case, now they're evaluating the free report, which was prepared outside of a litigation context, but was eventually used for declaratory judgment or declaratory relief in that case. Here we have a little bit of a different circumstance in that once you have a car accident and it's reported to a claims adjuster, there's really only three options. There's either it's going to litigation, it's going to settle before litigation, or in the very, very rare circumstances, the case disappears and it doesn't happen. As soon as you start talking to a claims adjuster, it seems like that goes to essentially you're either going to settle it pre-litigation or it's going to go to actual litigation. And the question throughout the next year of pre-litigation process, essentially, the way we view it is, when was it reasonable for an adjuster to say, all right, this one's fitting into that litigation context, I got to be ready for this, I need to start doing my research to defend my insured, as opposed to, well, I need to go through and figure out, you know, do my usual checks, make sure that everything's on the up and up so I can settle this case. Here, we have a year gap where there was the normal claim investigation, but then at some point it becomes clear that there's hundreds of thousands of dollars, there's serious allegations, and as if we'd had an evidentiary hearing on this, we would have seen that there's no settlement demand ever even made. So an adjuster has to look at this as anticipating litigation at some point, and our position is, after a year of back and forth and fruitless discussions, the adjuster had to start preparing for litigation, and that's what this was.
But is that, I mean, I guess that's the question in this case. Is that what it turns on? Because the argument you're making now is that the because of test doesn't focus on what was known at the time the video was taken, but it also incorporates stuff that happens up to a year later, subsequent negotiations, subsequent arguments. It sounds like that's what you're saying, or am I misunderstanding?
No. The I'm talking about the context. So the Sub Rosa videos were commissioned a year after the accident.
Okay.
So there's all this context leading up to it to support.
Okay. I misunderstood what you're saying. Okay.
Yes. Sorry. So yeah, that's the timeline we're pointing to, and it's really interesting in that we do have these ISO reports. Oh my. These ISO reports, which really were part of the usual course of business. They were 12 days after, they're commissioned on kind of every case to make sure that the person isn't suing 37 people. But then we have this other completely separate, much more expensive, much more impeachment-oriented evidence a year later that's commissioned. And that's our argument, is that there's a substantial difference between these two, and the adjuster, who qualifies under 26B3, was only ordering these videos once it was absolutely clear that you needed some litigation defense, and that's what these were. Oh, so that's my, I, I would like to be able to respond to Mr. Marchek, so I guess I think I have 2 minutes left, so I guess I'll yield right there, if that's right.
It goes by fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, sir.
All right, thank you, Mr. Muehlbauer. We'll switch then to the respondents through Mr. Marchek.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. May it please the court. Your Honors, the 2019 amendments to the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure, which were modeled after the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, are designed to facilitate transparency, collaboration, and cost-efficient discovery. A decision here, Your Honors, favoring the disclosure of these recordings, just like Judge Scotty had ordered, documents will further that important policy. Let me tell you why. NRCP 16-1 is quite clear that parties, without even awaiting discovery requests, must turn over all documents in their control, all witnesses in their control, that support claims or defenses, including impeachment or rebuttal evidence. The advisory committee note includes forms of evidence in audiovisual format. This section states, now, the countervailing law is NRCP 26B3. This section states information is privileged if gathered in anticipation of litigation. This section is simply a part of the work product privilege. It neither expands nor contracts that privilege. It protects privileged communications and materials that will never be introduced into evidence, not communications or materials that can be introduced later. The I'm going to call Keolis, or the defendant, I guess there's a petitioner, has conceded this is really a work product privilege case. And the Wynn case gives us and reminds us what work product is about. Now, I'll just read briefly. I know the court's read it, but, you know, at its core, the work product doctrine shelters mental impressions, mental processes of the attorney, providing a privileged area within which he can analyze and prepare his client's case. Thus, an attorney work product, which includes mental impressions, conclusions, opinions, and legal theories of counsel, are not discoverable. These videos, two of which and reports, were done before even any attorney involvement, do not invoke the work product privilege. They do not implicate in any way the mental processes of an attorney, mental impressions, conclusions, or legal theories of counsel. At the petitioner's brief, page 13, it admits that not all documents acquired in anticipation of litigation are protected. Things that are routine claims handling are not protected. NRS 686A.310 requires in the state of Nevada that insurance companies promulgate policies to handle claims handling. In Wynn, the anticipation of litigation defense, we'll call it, to producing documents must be, and I'm quoting now, the sine qua non for the creation of the document. But for the prospect of that litigation, the document would not exist. Conversely, the rule withholds protection from documents that are prepared in the ordinary course of business or that would have been created in essentially similar form irrespective of litigation. Here, Keolis suggests and then conflates that because it was informed the plaintiff had, quote, massive damages, it knew the case was headed for litigation. I will tell you, Your Honor, the first time that Keolis was ever aware of the damages, even though Mr. Muehlbauer has indicated there were some pre-filing discussions, was in the request for exemption of arbitration. That was the first time it was ever informed of the nature and extent of the damages here. Moreover, as the amicus brief from the Justice Association points out, under Wynn, if they're basing it on the fact that an attorney was involved and on massive damages, it would not be premised on the anticipation of litigation. They would be making a decision based on the amount of claims. But that argument falls because they didn't know of the damages until the request for exemption from arbitration. If you look at their own writ, page 13, they cite when they first discovered that she had over $274,000 in damages. And again, that was well after litigation had commenced.
Well, Mr. Marchek, let me interrupt you, because were you the attorney that represented her or made the representation before the insurance company before the complaint was filed?
Yes, I've been her attorney since day one, Your Honor.
Okay, so when you made your request to the insurance company, that was approximately a year before you filed the complaint?
Well, when you say request, are you?
Well, you made your representation. You sent a letter of representation on behalf of your client to the insurance company approximately, I think it was 1 year before the complaint was filed.
No, Your Honor. It was, I made I sent the representation letter approximately 5 days after the injury itself. And it was a simple rep letter, you know, identifying that I represented Shaytoff and that we were going to be asserting a claim. There was no information in there about damages or anything like that.
So I certainly don't want to get into any type of improper attorney-client privilege, but once you made the representation to the, you know, to the insurance company, the videos, the Sub Rosa videos that were taken were approximately what? The first two were taken a year later?
Yes, that's correct. Those were taken in August, I believe, of the following year.
So under the new rules, it's claims and defenses and proportionality that govern production of certain types of discovery. Without having the plaintiff's deposition first, how would the petitioner in this case know that the sub rosa could be used for a purpose of a defense?
Or impeachment or rebuttal? Well, they took those, Your Honor, for a reason, and they're not disclosing those for a reason, but the fact is of taking them, courts, I'm well aware of the fact that these are done routinely by insurance companies, but they can be used for any purpose in the claims phase, or if a case goes to litigation and then they ask questions that someone may not remember or know, then it's potentially impeachment or rebuttal.
Would you agree that the petitioner is willing to give you the video surveillance, the sub rosa tapes, after the deposition of your client is taken, assuming that they can use them for some purpose in the litigation? I mean, they haven't said, no, we're never going to give you the tapes, right?
Well, the order from the, even the discovery commissioner ordered that those be turned over 30 days after Ms. Toss' deposition was taken.
And now, so your objection was to allow you to have the videotapes right away and not have to wait.
Correct, Your Honor. And we think our interpretation facilitates the very laudable public policy to streamline and litigation and lower the cost of litigation. These things are clearly required to be disclosed in the rule. Claims or defenses, impeachment or rebuttal, and to turn those over is going to facilitate a much more collaborative discovery process rather than lying in wait, you know, asking questions of things that happened 2-3 years ago, and then trying to get maximum impact against the plaintiff later on at trial.
How does waiting 30 days after the plaintiff's deposition cause that or fulfill your concern that you've just articulated?
Well, because we wouldn't have been able to review them, Your Honor, and so, you know, deposition testimony is under oath and parties are pretty much locked in at that point. It would be very difficult and, of course, possibly damage the client's case if, in fact, there was, you know, we try to go back and change it after we get that videotape. You know, my client also, I know it's not in the record and maybe it's not proper for me to even mention this, but I will, you know, has a brain injury as a result of this. And she's been going through extensive treatment. That's why there was no demand ever sent to Keolis's insurer, because she was treating right up through the statute of limitations and we had to file. So we think that Discovery Commissioner's decision, what we don't understand, Your Honor, is how something can be privileged but then disclosed later on after you wait.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Marchek. I mean, you know, work product and attorney-client privilege are never absolute. You have things like substantial need, undue hardship, prejudice, all these factors that you're taking into consideration, right? Yes. So given that these are videotapes of your client, shouldn't your client have at least some idea of what might be in these videos?
Your Honor, let me ask you this. Do you remember what you did October 1st, 2018?
Well, but the difference is I'm presuming, I mean, obviously we don't know what's in this videotape. We can, you know, I don't know if it helps your client or hurts your client, but you know, the way that these videos, I mean, you've done more of these cases than I have, but the traditional way these videotapes show is that your client's claiming they can't play tennis, there's a video of your client playing tennis, you know, or something along those lines. I don't know what the particular facts are here. I mean, you wouldn't your client have some idea of whether or not she's ever, during the rough time frame when these videos were taken, that she's engaged in some activity that she said that she can't do, or vice versa. Maybe she can assure you that, oh, no, the entire time I was in a wheelchair or whatever it is, and there's no other video showing me ever out of a wheelchair. I mean, wouldn't you have some clue as to what's in these videos, what might be in these videos?
Well, she wasn't injured to the extent, you know, she was in a wheelchair at any given time, you know. And I know you're just citing that as an example of something
right,
that might
yeah.
jar her recollection. But the fact is, I don't think most people remember, but if you have a you know, brain injury and she's treating with a neurologist and a neuropsych, I think it's definitely unlikely. Matter of fact, she wouldn't remember. And so, you know, there is a need to get these. There's no other way that we could No, and, you know, Mr. Mühlbauer says we've never made any claim for a substantial need. Not quite true. We did in the objection to the that was filed to the Discovery Commissioner's report and recommendation. We also mentioned it in our brief here, our answering brief. So, you know, if I can just sum up, Your Honors, is in conclusion, if we were to accept Keolis's interpretation of the work product privilege, essentially, once there's an attorney letter, that opens up everything acquired thereafter as an anticipation litigation. Well, that can't be the case, because everybody admits, even the Supreme Court, that things gathered in the ordinary course of business are not protected. That would just completely open things up, and there would be much more litigation over this privilege and having to now come before the court on multitude of cases and make an argument for substantial need or undue hardship or something to that effect. That is not the overall intent of the rule changes. From what I read, it seems to me they want to streamline the process and make it easier, even to the extent of getting into cost-benefit analysis and discovery, you know, which is not part of this case, but it's part of the new Rule 26. Last, you know, Keolis has to show, you know, privileges should be narrowly construed. You know, privileges keep information from the finder of fact. This would be a broad and expansive use of this privilege, and Keolis, again, taking their position would open it up far wider than it currently is under the current situation. And they haven't even really made an argument under Wynn, if you look at the amicus brief by the Justice Association, that very well kind of took down this argument of anticipation litigation. They were looking at, there was an attorney letter, and these so-called massive damages, which again, a little bit put the cart before the horse there, because that wasn't known till well after litigation. I can see my time.
Hang on, I know, if Judge Evans, do you mind if we add a couple minutes just so I can ask one more question?
Go ahead.
Okay, so here's my question. Like, looking at it from the district court's point of view, you know, privilege issues always end up being like this catch-22, right? You don't know if it's privileged until you know what the facts surrounding the creation of a video or a document are. But once you know the facts surrounding the creation of a video or a document, you know what's in the document, and, you know, and the privilege is basically defeated. That's a common problem with these privilege issues. So if you're the district court judge and you have this issue, right, someone is saying this document is privileged, and you don't want to speed, you know, right to the deposition of the guy taking the video, because once you start asking with the circumstances of the video, you know what's in the video, and you might as well just waive the privilege. So what do you propose a district judge should do to resolve this dilemma?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I mean, again, taking the broad view of the 2019 amendments are to disclose things for the laudable goal so everybody knows their positions. That has a lot of value in litigation. It can promote settlement. It can promote settlement in the claims phase too, even though, you know, Bauer discounts that. But the fact is, if there is video tape, that can be used in the claims phase to possibly resolve cases before they ever get to court. I think the rule changes are substantial and clearly cry out for this type of impeachment or rebuttal or, you know, claims or defenses, which was in the old rule, but be disclosed to streamline the process, cut down on law and motion practice, facilitate settlements and cooperation.
Mr. Marchek, I think Judge Howe's hinting there might be some balancing that needs to be done in certain situations, and it's not always a black and white or yes or no or absolute or something like that. And the district court order in this case says that the plaintiff's first set of requests for production of documents, including the subject, surveillance, videos, and reports, defendant must respond immediately. So does that mean the defendant has to immediately present everything? And what's the district court's basis? You know, we're trying to determine if there was an abuse of discretion. There's no explanation given here.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the there's still the, you know, the test in the Wynn case that can determine, you know, whether something is acquired because of anticipated litigation or in the ordinary course of business. That's something that the court can always use to balance things. But, you know, you have the clear language of the rule that is of the best guidance, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Marchek. We'll go back to the petitioner then for Mr. Muehlbauer. Since we went over time with Mr. Marchek, we'll put your rebuttal time at 3 minutes as you originally requested.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah. Just touching on exactly what we were just talking about right at the end there, honestly, I expected that if the district court was going to overturn or deny the discovery commissioner's report and recommendation, I thought there would be supplemental briefing, affidavits, a hearing to establish whether the anticipation of litigation is supported by facts. Instead, it was just, nope, turn it all over, which was very shocking, which is why we're here today. Because we're all a little hamstrung at this point. You know, Mr. Marchek references, we only cited the request for exemption for damages. That's because everything else is privileged and not in the record. I'm only citing things that are in the record because that's the court's protocol. There's 2 years of communication prior to the lawsuit being filed. There's 1 year from the accident to the videos, and there's a lot of material there. And as Mr. Marchek just said, she was treating for a head injury for 2 solid years and never issued a settlement demand. Those are factors that would generally come into determining whether there's an anticipation of litigation, whether that's reasonable. So that's just where I would weigh in on that question, Your Honor. And then on the 16.1 issues, it's to support our claims or defenses. It's everything may use to support their claims or defenses. I have the language up right in front of me. It's not everything on the planet. It's not everything that's relevant. It's not everything that you could ever think of that might be. So it's what we use to support our claims and defenses. And that's exactly what we're trying to determine right now. And regardless, it was an NRCP 34 request anyway, and we're asserting privilege. And this 16.1 literally says that are not protected by privilege. So this reliance in 16.1, I don't think is really the best. I do think the amicus had some better arguments, and it was directing at, is this, you know, in the ordinary course, or is this anticipation of litigation? And despite what the amicus said and what Mr. Marchak said there, I just went through the fact, the difference between the ISO reports over here and a year later, the surveillance reports. And we're not arguing that as soon as there's a letter of representation, everything is privileged from there on out, you can't touch it. No, I specifically drew the distinction between things that are done in the ordinary course and things that are only done when you anticipate litigation. And there was a year of communication in between here. And I can't get into things that are outside the record, but a year of discussion, there can be a lot that happens. And then 2 years before even filing and never setting a settlement demand, I don't know what it would take to tell you that litigation is on the horizon, if not that. So, and just real, I have 24 seconds. Just to get to this point of saying, you know, will we put up the letter of representation and the damages instead of the because of test, that was to address the objective element of the Supreme Court's test. The Supreme Court says whether it can be fairly be said that they were produced for because of litigation. And as soon as you say fairly be said, that's an objective element. So I offered this court context and history so you could evaluate whether it was objectively reasonable. Thank you.
All right. You got it right to the second. Good job.
Harold.
All right. Well, we really appreciate the argument from both counsel. You both did a great job, so we're much better informed now than we were before, and we can still see we have a pretty sticky problem here. So we will have to take this under submission, enter a written decision as soon as we can. It's a pretrial issue. I hope everybody's not just sitting and waiting and nothing else is happening. I mean, maybe because of COVID-19, but not because of this case. But if that is the case, then you're going to have to bear with us because this is going to take a very thorough review.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Judge Tao, do you have any final comments?
Just to thank you guys for the quality of the argument. It was really good. You know, one of the reasons we set this argument is not only is it a really interesting issue with very far-reaching, you know, implications, not just for this case, but as you guys know, for potentially dozens, hundreds of cases out there, but also because of the quality of the attorneys. We looked at the counsel list and knew this was going to be a useful argument, which we can't say in every case, and it proved to be true. So we'll really appreciate the argument, and we're aware of the importance of this issue, and we're going to, you know, take a good look at this.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, Judge Bola.
Thank you both very much for the excellent argument and for addressing our questions so professionally and informatively, and we really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you in person when we don't have to put our masks on.
Yeah,
so thank you very much.
Thank you, judges. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you.